All right, we are back in session.
426, please, Carla.
Suspend system development charges for parks and recreation, environmental services, transportation, and water for the construction of accessory dwelling units that are occupied by the property owner or have a rental agreement subject to ORS 90, the Residential Landlord and Tenant Act.
Very good. Commissioner Udaly.
Thank you, Mayor. First, I'd like to move to consider an amended version of the resolution. It's been distributed earlier. The amended version directs a new approach to enforcement of the policy. Old language has strike-throughs. New language is underlined in copies of the resolution that was previously distributed.
Second.
Thank you.
We have a motion for is this actually a substitution?
Yes.
So we have a motion for a substitution, and this comes from Commissioner Udaly. It's seconded by Commissioner Fish.
Commissioner Udaly, for the purpose of people at home, could you just read into the record the additional, not the changes, but the be it further resolved that you're adding?
So sure.
That
be it further resolved that the Council further directs the Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services Revenue Division to administer short-term rental covenants associated with SDC waivers for ADUs, develop a fee schedule and budget for administering SDR covenants, collect data annually about rents charged to ADUs that receive SDC waivers, enforce violations of SDR covenants, and present a biannual report to Council regarding the volume of SDC waivers granted and rental rates at ADUs that receive SDC waivers. The Revenue Division will begin administering STR covenants within 120 days of receiving STR data from the STR platforms. If Portland Housing Bureau or another city bureau begins collecting rental data that includes rents charged by landlords, the rent data collection function and biennial reporting requirement will transfer to that bureau. That's it. Okay. So, hello, everybody. The systems development charge waiver for accessory dwelling units has had a powerful impact on the market. Since the waiver was originally approved by the City Council in 2012, development of ADUs has dramatically increased from roughly 50 a year to 500 a year. This resolution directs SDC charging bureaus to extend the waiver. It does not include a sunset, but it does direct that a biennial report about the policy be presented to Council. That report will enable future councils to evaluate the ongoing efficacy and necessity of the ADU SDC waiver. The other significant policy change that this resolution directs is that recipients of SDC waivers will be required to sign a covenant barring them from listing their property on short-term rental platforms. This policy is designed to support the development of long-term rentals, not commercial development. This resolution represents a first step in a multi-step strategy to help Portlanders meaningfully engage in solving our housing problem. Some of our next steps include, or my next steps include, working with my colleagues to fund a project that will develop a lending product which will enable moderate-income homeowners to finance ADU development, as well as bring down the cost of developing ADUs with off-the-shelf designs, tenanting assistance, and other strategies. We will also be including ADUs in the field issuance remodel program at BDS. That will significantly decrease the time and headaches associated with permitting ADUs. And we will be exploring a limited property tax abatement for ADUs that are affordable to people earning 60 to 80% of median family income with our partners at the county. Government alone can't solve the housing crisis by itself. People in Portland want to help. More than 800 people signed up for a Multnomah County pilot program to host a homeless family in their backyard in an ADU built by the county. If we help create the right combination of incentives and market supports, Portlanders will step up to help us solve our housing problem while developing new sources of income for themselves and building wealth in their homes. Growth does not have to be a win-lose proposition for Portlanders, but it clearly has been. The rising tide of prosperity is leaving out many longtime Portlanders. A significant number of homeowners as well as renters are struggling to keep up. A recent Oregon Center for Public Policy report indicated that 24% of homeowners in Oregon are cost-burdened. I believe the number is significantly higher in the city of Portland. If we don't do this work, I'm worried that our approach to infill will only benefit affluent homeowners and developers. So we need to just develop strategies that enable as many Portlanders as possible to benefit from the city's growth and prosperity and the coming residential infill policy changes. We need to do everything we can to harness market forces to produce more affordable housing. ADUs are not going to solve our housing crisis alone, but they should be a significant part of our comprehensive strategy. I'm going to stop there and invite staff and some local experts to testify. We have Matt Wickstrom, Senior City Planner with BDS. Robert Liberty, Director of the Institute of Sustainable Solutions at PSU, and Eli Spivak, owner of Orange Spot LLC. Welcome. Please state your name for the record.
Matt Wickstrom, Bureau of Development Services. And what I'd like to do is quickly walk through the resolution with you. And I'll just start from the top and go, just kind of give you a summary of what the different components of the resolution are. So as Commissioner Udaly said, the resolution is to suspend SDC fees for ADUs that are not rented as accessory short-term rentals. And there's language in the ordinance that speaks to how ADUs contribute to the housing density and housing stock in Portland, therefore, which can have an impact on affordability overall. Then there's language in the resolution that just speaks to accessory dwelling units in the Portland zoning code and how we regulate them. It notes that the SDC fees for ADUs do present a substantial barrier to homeowners just because of the proportion of the cost the SDCs are in comparison to the overall project value. And then we outline that the intent of this resolution is not to allow the SDC waivers for accessory short-term rentals. And then as far as the now therefore be it resolved, the council would be asking the bureaus that charge SDC fees to return to council with a proposed amendments to Portland City Code that would extend the SDC waiver program so that it's no longer temporary. I understand it doesn't have a sunset date, but it would be reevaluated on a biannual basis. And then after that, it speaks to that there would be a penalty for those who do rent, who are found to have rented the accessory dwelling unit as a short-term rental while having also taken the SDC waiver. And the time period that the ADU cannot be rented as a short-term rental is 10 years, and the penalty for renting it within those 10 years would be 150% of the SDC fee at that time. And then finally, the resolution speaks to the Revenue Bureau being the bureau that would monitor accessory short-term rentals on Airbnb and HomeAway websites. And if they do notice that one that received an SDC waiver has been listed on those sites, they would notify the SDC bureaus, and then they would pursue collection of the waived SDC fees at that 150% rate.
And we have Thomas Lanham here, Director of Revenue Bureau, if anyone has questions about the enforcement piece. Thank you. Mr. Liberty.
Mr. Mayor and Commissioners, I'm Robert Liberty. I'm the Director of the Institute for Sustainable Solutions at Portland State University. First, I want to disclose that I've begun work on a basement ADU in our house. And if we are tardy in submitting our application, then we will personally benefit from the extension of the waiver. Since August of 2016, our institute has been making substantial investments of faculty, student, staff time, and cash to the tune of $140,000 on a project to promote accessory dwelling units and to have them and to have them achieve affordability, equity, and sustainability objectives. Our ADU project has engaged PSU faculty from architecture, business, economics, geography, gerontology, and urban and regional planning. We've worked with the staff at your bureaus of development services, housing, and sustainability, and we're grateful for the support we've had from Commissioner Udaly. Participants in our project include nonprofit housing providers, for-profit developers like Eli Spivak, financial institutions, and neighborhood groups. They're shown in Appendix A, although I probably have omitted some. We're collaborating to design, to help implement, and to evaluate a variety of public, private, and nonprofit systems, and I want to emphasize this point, systems, to A, greatly increase the production of ADUs in Portland, have ADU meet the housing needs of Portlanders of modest means, expressly those between 60 and 80% of median area household income, C, mitigate some of the displacement caused by gentrification and achieve related equity objectives, and D, use ADUs to help achieve some of the city's sustainability goals, particularly around greenhouse gases. There are a range of challenges to be overcome if we were to realize these goals, and a partial list of those challenges and our approach to them are provided in Appendix B. As part of the foundational work for these efforts, our institute commissioned a survey of more than 500 Portland ADU owners and tenants, carried out in toward the end of 2017 by Professor Matthew Gephardt and PhD student Yale Kidron. The survey confirmed that your waiver of STCs has been an essential contributor to the growth in ADU applications, which have risen, as Commissioner Udaly has said, from a few score to more than 500 in recent years. When asked, quote, did the system development charge STC waiver influence your decision to apply for an ADU permit? 70% of the respondents said yes. That response is not surprising, given that 15% of the ADUs built by the respondents cost less than $50,000, and another 31% cost between $50,000 and $100,000. Adding $15,000 in STC charges would increase, would translate into cost increase of between 15 and 30%. Some additional excerpts from that survey about the use, rents, and types of ADUs, and given in the context of some Portland data on household and home size, are attached in Appendix C. In conclusion, the STC waiver is essential to allow ADUs to continue to make a very important, and I would add, distinctive contribution to Portland's housing supply. They are not like apartments, and they're not like single-family homes. I look forward to our continued work with the city to find ways for ADUs to make Portland a hometown once again, where people of modest means can find a good quality home to live in across the city. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioners and Mayor, my name is Eli Spivak. I am a developer, general contractor. Although I'm not wearing the hat right now, I serve on the Planning Commission, and there will be some accessory dwelling units involved in the upcoming residential infill project. How it lands, I'm not sure where that will be yet. But I spoke 9 years ago in support of waiving system development charges to City Council. Things have changed a lot since then, and Portland should be commended for going with that experiment. We've been a national leader in accessory dwellings. Just last month, 11 jurisdictions around in the region are all coming together with metros convening to adopt their own accessory dwelling unit codes to stimulate the market, not just in Portland, but in cities all outside of Portland. The state of Oregon now requires every city to allow an accessory dwelling unit. California requires it now, and Washington, D.C. is making changes. It's happening across the country. Portland is looked to as a leader in this world. And although Portland has been a leader in the number of ADUs created, that's short-lived. Los Angeles just, based on the state requirement, legalized ADUs, and they got 1,600 permits issued in a few months. So we're not going to be the leader in numbers anymore, but we can be the leader in policy. And I think that the system development charge waiver was a key stimulus, and it's appropriate. I support the resolution that disqualifies short-term rentals from that waiver, but I think we should remember the benefits of accessory dwelling units beyond affordability. In terms of capital A affordability, we're actually restricting tenants based on their income or their rent level. One of them is that even a market rate accessory dwelling unit is by far the least expensive house in a neighborhood, oftentimes half the rent, even at market rent. The demographic match is perfect for our demographics we have right now, where there's aging population. The big population booms are in people retiring and getting smaller households, downsizing, and young people forming households for the first time. ADUs are a perfect match for either end of that continuum. ADUs also represent a way to reinvest in existing neighborhoods in such a way that you accompany existing houses or repurpose existing bedrooms rather than take down houses. Many ADUs, even unregulated, are rented for zero or almost nothing to family members or loved ones, just to provide some independence and act as a safety net that people can do on their own. And the thing that originally got me invested in the ADU world was environmental benefits. Just having smaller space of house to condition decreases the climate impacts of living in a city. I was really excited by the brilliant suggestion from, I think it was Commissioner Fish's and Todd's office of, if we're going to provide this subsidy, why don't we get some data out of it? And I know it takes a lot of work for ISS and others to collect data from owners. So collecting rent data is one great idea. I could think of some other data I might also want to collect from SECs in exchange for getting the waiver. Perhaps we can talk about that later to inform our decision making. But I think that going forward, the great thing Portland can lead on that's not being done anywhere else in the country is figuring out ways that less affluent people can create ADUs. Because right now, to do it, you need to have $50,000 or $150,000 bucks in your back pocket or have a lot of home equity to build one. So it's great for the person who rents it, who lives in it, but it still takes a certain level of affluence to create one in the first place. And what Portland can do with new financial products, where there's frankly a market gap, perhaps some property tax abatement assistance, is to help make creating them more available. And if we want to achieve affordable, like regulated affordable housing and accessory dwelling units, there are some tools we could look at, like a waiver of your limited property tax while you have someone low income living in the ADU. Or if the city provides some financing, do a waiver on interest payments during the time that someone who's income qualifying lives there at a low rent. So there are some tools we can explore. And we know, though, that from other cities that have linked accessory dwelling units to regulated affordable housing, it's turned out to be a poison pill, intentioned or not. So I hope that Portland does look for new ways that we can stimulate affordable housing and ADUs and look for some of the financing things that ISS is working on with Craft 3 to be a leader in that way as well. Thanks.
Thank you.
Colleagues, any questions?
Yeah, I have a question for Eli. I know that you do cottage cluster development. Why should an accessory dwelling unit that is 800 square feet not pay SDCs, whereas a building in a cottage cluster that doesn't happen to be an ADU, but is it 800 square feet, why should there be a difference in how much they pay SDCs?
I think that, well, Poland doesn't allow cottage clusters now, at least in the way.
No, aren't we?
What did you say?
Are we not going to in the new infill?
I'm sort of juggling my hats here. The discussion draft doesn't add cottage clusters in the way you increase your density for smaller homes. They would allow accessory dwelling units to accompany primary homes in plan developments. So that may be a good question to ask, to jump in when we get there. I mean, it's a fair question of whether, I mean, the prime question here is, should accessory dwelling units get a benefit and not pay towards resource city infrastructure resources. And I think that it is a subsidy for accessory dwelling units. That's why I wanted to outline the other policy reasons why the city has been and I think should continue to encourage them. I said a few years ago that the best approach would be to waive the fees until we scale down SECs all based on home size. And Parks Bureau has done that. Other bureaus have not. So I guess too, it's a fair policy question. I think that if you have, in some cities that allow cottage clusters, they usually allow them up to about 1,200 square feet, which really gets a three-bedroom size. And at this point, though, Portland has this accessory dwelling unit animal that is capped at 800 square feet or three-quarters the size of the main house, which is a bit smaller than what most cottage clusters are allowed.
Mr. Liberty.
An addendum that might address some of the interests of Commissioner Fritz. The survey showed that 41% of the units were under 500 square feet. An additional 28% were 500 to 700 square feet. 43% were interior, at least 43% were internal conversions. So, I should say garage renovations, basement renovations, and a certain share are attics. The other thing that Eli mentioned is, looking at both rents and home costs, the average home price, single-family home price in Portland is about $400,000. If you need 20% down payment, that's $80,000. If you want to build a $150,000 ADU, you need $150,000. That's one of the big challenges. Another is, my background is in land use policy, but I now have to become a developer in order to do this, and that is a tremendous burden. And so making it as easy to build an ADU as it is to get solar panels, something that Inhabit's working on, I think, is also critical. Finally, the rent information we have, and Eli has alluded to this, both from the 2013 survey and our survey, shows a lot of the units are charged below market or no rent to family or friends. And the rent range we have from the survey is pretty much close to the range of what would be affordable to 60 to 80% of median family income right now. Now, not all of them, and we don't have the breakdown, but it means that the policy interventions available to the city might be pretty inexpensive for those people in that market range. That's what's a very interesting experiment. This is the private sector is building the units, and then nonprofits, the homeowners themselves who own the ADUs, and government together maybe just need to provide a little bit more, plus some information to make that a significant supply. That's what's really exciting about it. And we do all that, we also get big greenhouse gas benefits out of it.
Thank you.
I don't know how many houses you'd be allowed to build in a cottage cluster scenario, but one of the arguments for me in support of ADUs is presumably we're going to allow people to build two ADUs when RIP comes, one in the basement and one either attached or detached. That's really just adding one or two units onto an existing home, relatively small units, and in many cases bringing the number of residents on that property back up to more historic levels, because our single-family neighborhoods are in general less dense than ever, because people are having smaller families and there's not as many multi-generational households. So I'd say, you know, the difference between adding one or two ADUs and adding six individual homes on one lot is significant, and that would be my justification of waiving SDCs for ADUs versus cottage clusters.
Well, it depends, though, on the zoning and on who's benefiting and who's burdened. So there's a I'm going to be bringing to council in the next few weeks a transfer of development rights from the community garden at Thomas Cully Park, where Saving Community Development Association is developing a cottage cluster on an R3 zoned property right next door. Okay. 16,000 square feet. They're going to do 10 detached homes. And I think it's going to be a wonderful development. So that's what they're trying for. Mm-hmm. That's single-family homes that are going to be at affordable rents because it's Saving Community Development Association. Now, admittedly, they'll get a different exemption. Mm-hmm. But I think we should be looking at like with like and just looking at how does growth pay its way? Because all these people who are going to be living in these accessory dwelling units, particularly if you've taken your backyard to put the accessory dwelling units in, they're going to need a park to play in somewhere nearby. And how does that if we have the philosophy, which we've had for many years, thanks to the urban growth boundary and the Metro 2040 plan, that growth is going to pay its way, how does this jive with that?
Let me answer a technical question first. The cottage cluster you just described there is a multifamily zoning, so they would pay a reduced impact fee compared to single-family homes because you just pay lower rates per unit in multifamily than you do in single-family. And if the residential infill project folds in a cottage cluster provision, as City Council has asked them to do, that would be an example of a cottage cluster provision within single-family zoning, where SDC rates are at a step higher. So I think that the development you're thinking of, even if it weren't a nonprofit sponsor, if they actually have to pay the SDCs, they'd be paying at a lower rate. I'm building two projects right now that are multifamily zoning. Effectively, you might call them a cottage cluster, but they're outside of what the residential infill project would be doing because it's zoned multifamily. To your main point, I think that there is, I want to give you credit for that. It's correct that we like to pay as we go for infrastructure stuff, for uses. And I think I'm going to sort of listen to what Commissioner Udaly said about the, in many of our established neighborhoods, population density has gone down, and ADUs are a way of bringing the population up to what was there beforehand, and that those impacts have been paid for by prior owners investing through property taxes or whatever it was before we did system development charges to create some parks. And this has been a stimulus strategy that's been effective. I think we still achieve good public policy benefits from accessory dwelling units appropriate to the small level of subsidy we provide to them through the SDC waiver program.
But isn't it true that
I take your point. I mean, it's a good point.
Isn't it true that the accessory dwelling units have mostly been done in higher income neighborhoods? So it's the people who are already homeowners who are then getting this break, and it's the only 0.9% of them are in East Portland, and that's the place that most needs the system development charges to build up the system.
That's why we need our loan product. Right.
I would say that, first of all, having people, and I would say it's not wealthy people building them, it's people with a lot of home equity. They may or may not be wealthy. Wealthy people don't need them. So people with home equity are investing that in something that's providing housing supply. Now compare that strategy to relying on a housing bond for a different population at $200,000 each. I think you're creating supply that you can then use in a way that benefits the community. Without that, it wouldn't exist. And I believe without this waiver, a lot of those units would not have been built. Now you're questioning about is it fair and how is the burden distributed to pay for infrastructure is a good one, and I think that's why the sunset clause or the review period is appropriate to look at that and decide is it fair, are we getting the results. If in 2 years you saw the same pattern and there wasn't a change in how they were used, then I think it's going to be a legitimate question.
But that's the point of this sunset, and it's a hard sunset. And I would suggest that the evidence shows that it is not only not fair, it's not equitable. The places that have been benefiting, the areas of town, are the more affluent areas, the ones with more homeowners, and the places that really need the system development charge money to build capacity in the system are the ones that continue to need
the system. Are the beneficiaries the tenants rather than the owners?
I think we've gotten way off track here. I mean, so we're going to just all of a sudden ignore the fact that we have a policy that promotes new development and opportunity areas? The equity lens here is who's being served, not the geography in which they're being built. And the reality is that we have a strong preference in our policies for encouraging development with our limited toolkit, which is either carrots or sticks, in areas of high opportunity. To call that inequitable goes against the whole notion of opportunity.
Some of the neighborhoods where you're seeing most ADUs built are very expensive and have been very resistant to up zones. And this seems to be the most politically palatable way of getting smaller, more affordable units in those communities.
Let me offer an analogy.
People can afford to live there.
No one here would say that it is inequitable to give a tax abatement to someone who wants to put a fancy development in an affluent area that produces, under inclusionary housing, a percentage of units that are set aside that are affordable. We'd actually say that that's the best possible outcome because it's in a high-opportunity neighborhood with good infrastructure, close to schools, with transportation, and we're now actually expanding choice in giving people a choice in where they're going to live. So the notion, my guess is that there's less ADUs in East Portland, as Commissioner Udaly was just alluding to, because of the cost barriers. And as you pointed out, Professor Liberty, it's not like buying a house. We put 20% down. You actually probably have to have the full 150, or find some way to finance it that's different. So, I don't buy the argument that it's a failed policy or inequitable. simply because East Portland isn't fully participating, I think that points to other barriers of entry that we can address by having different financing mechanisms that encourage neighborhoods that don't have the same access to capital to build accessory dwelling units.
But actually, if you drill down, it does, because taking less system development charge money from one group of developers increases the assessments required from the remaining pool of applicants who then are not building those. And that's particularly the case in the utilities. So we're required to replace funding that we don't take in when we waive SDCs.
Well,
and so that's going to have to come from rates
bureaus. Let's be clear. One of the reasons one of the number of reasons why I'm not opposed to this policy is it actually has a very modest impact. It has an extremely modest impact on the rates. I wish they were being built to scale to such a point that we could have the debate about whether it's putting pressure on rates. But what we're trying to do is still prime the pump. If and when the pump is primed, we can talk about whether it needs to be sunset. Professor Liberty.
If I may, with regard to the distribution of the units, I think one of the things that happened, not concurrently with the recovery from the recession, the waiver of the SDCs, and some changes to the regulatory requirements, is Portland became a hot destination for tourism. I mean, I never would have imagined 20 years ago to see tourists, wealthy tourists from mainland China, going to Division Street to eat at fancy restaurants. I mean, that was inconceivable. So those neighborhoods became very attractive for high returns, which some people use to finance their ADUs. When there is more knowledge and opportunity in financing, I think the ADUs built in outer neighborhoods, which are not as desirable as a short-term rental location, and some of the housing is actually cheaper to convert. So when my parents moved from inner Portland in 1962 to Washington County, we moved into a standard ranch home on a slope with a downstairs with a big window, a wet bar, two bedrooms. Now, to convert that into a rental unit would be very inexpensive, be great housing, and create, I think, a bigger supply over larger parts of the city. So what I think we're seeing is the beginning of the market. This is the pump priming stage. And what we want to do, and I think all your partners want to do, is to make sure that the opportunity is more widespread, serves more housing needs. And I think there will always be, of course, this question about who's bearing the burden in terms of the infrastructure. But I would agree with Eli that the city was built with infrastructure for a much higher population density in those neighborhoods than currently lives in it.
I'll also add one other comment, because I think this is a fascinating discussion. If the question was philosophically, should we be encouraging the private sector to do certain things that we want them to do by using foregone revenue, I would say that's not my preferred way of doing it. So there is inherent in tax abatements, in tax credits, in waivers of SDCs and other things, there are distortions that in a perfect world we would correct by having enough money to provide a direct subsidy. The direct subsidy route is obviously the most efficient way of doing it, but we don't have the resources to do it, so we use a lot of carrots in our toolkit that result in foregone revenue. The foregone revenue impacts infrastructure, impacts school funding, impacts money available to the county to fund good deeds, impacts our general fund. But we're using the tool, A, because we don't have necessarily a better tool, and B, we've made a judgment that the public benefit outweighs the cost. But even within the tax abatement plan, I mean, we have tax abatements that come before us, and depending on the value of the dirt, the abatement could be worth X versus Y. We pay the value is more. The hit to the general fund is more in nice areas that have established infrastructure and therefore higher property values. But we make a judgment that investing in high opportunity neighborhoods is actually a positive thing. So in a perfect world, again, I'd rather have the dollars go out through the front door and not the back door, because it does produce some distortions. We don't live in that perfect world, and we have only a handful of ways to stimulate the private sector to do things which we think are in our long-term public interest.
And I'd like to be clear that I share Commissioner Fritz's concerns about who this is benefiting, and that this waiver is only one piece of a much larger strategy, and that strategy must include a lending product. So we can deliver the benefits of RIP as far down the income spectrum as possible. as everyone has noted, you need to have access to capital to develop an ADU. There is no loan product for an ADU. And in simplest terms, what this loan product would do is take into account the rent generated by the ADU, and that would enable much more modest income homeowners to develop ADUs. And I see this as a strategy for people who want to age in place, people who want to get their kids out of their basement, maybe mm-hmm. into their backyard. That's kind of my situation. just really, he's not in my basement. He's in my second bedroom. But I just...
That's cold.
Yeah, but after this, he may want to be in the basement. Yeah,
one year till he's 18.
That's cold.
And then it's to the backyard. But, I mean, honestly, the ADU will probably be nicer than the main house. Anyhow, it's a low-impact way to add density to our single-family neighborhoods, and it's also a way to invite average Portlanders to help us solve part of our housing crisis. And that's the most hopeful thing to me. When we talk about the numbers, 25,000 unit affordable units short, 35,000, however many units we are behind, that is so daunting. And I do the math based on what we're producing now, and I think we might solve that problem in 500 years. Maybe human being, you know, maybe our population will decline and it will happen a little faster. But by breaking it down and giving opportunity to potentially thousands of property owners in our city, it becomes infinitely more doable. And I'm really, really hoping that we can hit this from every angle and make the most of this opportunity that's coming with RIP.
Could I, since I never like to miss out on a nerdy conversation, do we have good data on what I guess I'll just call the but-for argument? Do we know that if you provide this subsidy, how many additional units it's generating at the margin? Do we have any sense of that?
That question was not asked, Mr. Mayor, in the survey. They just asked if it was important, and you have to deduce based on the relative weight of the SDC waiver compared to the total project budget. That's pretty substantial. My anecdote is if the SDC waiver was applied, we wouldn't be building our unit. It's just absolutely impossible.
That's fair enough. So on the margin, I think that certainly made a difference for you.
I think if we can go a little deeper into nerddom, I think the other thing that is some light is shed on is what would be the alternative for the people in the ADUs if they didn't exist? For most of them, it's apartments. And the people who choose to live in an ADU are picking something that's quite different from an apartment, which has some of the attributes and a location, like a single-family home, but a rent that's at least, in many cases, competitive with what it would be for an apartment. I think in the future, there are not many families that have children in ADUs right now. It's a small percentage. But school choice is very important. We have a problem with income segregation in Portland public schools. It's pretty significant.
So let me stipulate on the demand side. This is a fabulous thing. I'm not disputing that at all. I love ADUs. Eli sort of hit the nail on the head in terms of my thinking. This is the lowest threshold, easiest, politically most expedient way to drive additional housing into what, if I can just use the pejorative, are more, quote, traditional, unquote, neighborhoods. It fits with the character. People don't come in here and get riled up about an ADU. It seems to be broadly accepted as a strategy, and it creates, on the demand side, all these great opportunities that wouldn't be there otherwise. I guess where I was going with this is the marginal value of creating an ADU greater than the cost when you sell your house? I mean, it seems to me, from the perspective of a homeowner, it is the economically rational and smart thing to do to build an ADU, because the cost you pay, and you said whatever you said it was, $50,000 to whatever $1,000, my guess is you get back a lot more than that in additive value when you sell your house. Do you know if that's true or is that false?
It's actually one of the things that in the project we've heard, and Eli has been at this a lot longer than I have, the appraisers don't agree.
Okay.
And I went to speak to some realtors in Hillsborough last month about this, and they asked me for information. I said, I don't think we know yet.
Okay.
But what we can show, and the survey shows, is the payback period on the investment. That return is high. Now, that includes the 26% that are getting short-term rental income, and that's very high. One of the products that will come next from our project will be from the Northwest Economic Research Center, and it will be a kind of pro forma for the homeowners to help them think about this. So that will, it's not going to answer a question about the market, but it will help homeowners make the decision about whether it's a good investment.
So on the equity argument, and then I'll stop, but it was such a great, and it was really good conversation, and I didn't want to interrupt it. I agree that on the demand side, the equity issue is being addressed in any area of high opportunity, provided that the price is right and people are able to afford to come in at various levels of affordability. I do think there's an equity issue on the supply side. If we're providing a government subsidy broadly that is not being used broadly but is providing additive value to a limited or a select group of homeowners, that is an inequity.
Mayor, can I address that for a sec?
Yeah, please.
Because I want to throw up and maybe ask Professor Liberty to comment on this. You said something this morning about us being more intentional about taking the age-friendly format framework and applying it to our policy. So let me offer the obvious analogy. The assumption you're making in the question you ask is that we're providing a benefit that increases the value of an asset and that someone potentially gets a windfall when they turn around and sell their house. Let's assume that what we're trying to do is prevent someone from having to sell their house and instead hold on to their house as an asset. Let's take the person that we want to age in place, the elderly couple that can no longer manage a house, that transitions to the ADU and rents out their house so they have a steady stream of income which covers their expenses that allows them to age in place. If that ends up being a byproduct of this, that older residents who would prefer not to sell and would like to keep the house in the family, use the house as a rental stream, move into an ADU and flip the arrangement, it seems to me, if the data supports it, that would be a big win for an age-friendly Portland.
Yeah, I don't disagree. But again, that potential benefit's not available broadly. It's available to those particular homeowners.
I think,
but I don't dispute that. For me, this is somewhat of an interesting academic conversation. I support this, but I just want to be clear. It's multifaceted, both on the supply and the demand side.
Mayor Wheeler, I think that's an appropriate question. And if the benefits are accruing mostly to people that already have a lot of assets in their homes, I think you have to think about the policy.
Well, I think we should measure it.
Right. Well, I agree. And I think
actually, we already have that policy. It's called the mortgage interest deduction.
Right. That's correct.
True. That's exactly right, Nick.
But what I would say is that one of the reasons it's been taken up in those neighborhoods, I think, has less to do in – it's not only just the equity, but the intellectual capacity and professional connections people have who are able to do this. That's one – I mean, it's not just the money. It's like a part-time job to do this, and that's something also that we have to address, is there has to be a development of a set of services, some of which can be public, some of which are nonprofit, some of which are purely private and for-profit, to help people to make it really easy, because most people do not have the time or the capacity to do this right now. That is something that needs to evolve, and I think when we see that, you'll see it spread in other neighborhoods. The second thing is, I think when you come around to reevaluating, you can say, maybe, well, I would say that the impact of the...
Just stop a minute, though, because if we don't have an actual hard sunset, there isn't really an evaluation.
Well, I was going to talk about that, actually.
Go ahead, then. Sorry.
I think having an evaluation built into this is logical and appropriate. We are trying to do that with the existing policy as well. And I think the question about who's going to reap the benefits is an important one. You have a lot of tools, though, I think you can have to distribute the benefits more equitably between different neighborhoods.
Well, but we had testimony from Bishop Stephen Holt, who are looking at this issue in the North Northeast Plan, and they have recommended not moving forward with supporting more additional, well, at least continuing to monitor it. And he cited the very thing that you just said, that people may not be ready to be business owners, that they may not know all the rules about landlord-tenant law, that it's a more significant undertaking if they are going to rent them than just the matter of who gets to build them.
But we're not requiring anybody to do this. And Bishop Holt was referring to, from what I could tell, a small sampling of people that came to a meeting that expressed some hesitation about it. But this is not a forced policy. This is something you can opt in or not.
Well, yes, and we're talking about who gets to benefit from the waiver. It was $8 million of lost revenue in parks in 2017 from the affordable housing waiver and that system development charge waivers. That's a lot of money that could be used for developing new parks in East Portland, where you'll all remember those three lovely master plans that we approved that we don't have the money to build. So the waivers benefit homeowners and potentially the few renters who are renting those individual apartments. The people who are burdened are renters in other areas of the city who need the services and who are not going to get them because we're not going to have those $8 million a year.
So we're having all the fun up here. And this has actually been a fantastic conversation. I'll let Chloe or Commissioner Udaly get the last word, and then we should open it up for some public testimony. Carla, how many people have expressed an interest?
I show seven more.
Very good. Commissioner Udaly.
Well, since it hasn't come up yet, I just want to point out the ADU development will generate tax revenue for the city and the county. And while there is foregone revenue on the SDC side, we have a real issue with maintenance of our parks and our streets, and we can't spend SDC money on that. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but it would be interesting to look at, compare the tax revenue versus the foregone revenue on the SDC side.
Yeah, I actually do have the numbers, and it's not significant. The amount of tax revenue you get from them is not enough to pay for the operations of maintenance.
Well, if we were building 1,500 ADUs a year, maybe it would be.
Gentlemen, anything else for right now before we go into public testimony?
If I may,
yeah,
just
please.
Quickly.
Yes, sir.
With regard to the new ordinance that will prohibit short-term rentals, I think it'll be very interesting to see if that shifts the geography significantly. Because I think the inner neighborhoods, which have high demand, the ones where people are building it to serve that need. And with other things that are in progress, I think maybe we'll see a broader distribution. That's certainly my hope and goal.
Very good. Excellent discussion. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, folks, when you're called up for public testimony, you get 3 minutes. The yellow light will give you 30 seconds. When it is red, please stop talking, because I hate to be the talking police guy. So please wrap it up when you get to your 3 minutes. State your name for the record. We don't need your address. Please do let us know if you're a member of a lobbyist organization. That's required by council rules. First three, Carla.
Are Joe Robertson, Robert Bergen, and Tom Miller.
Thank you for being here.
Tim Miller, I'm
sorry.
That was
the longest 30 minutes of my life.
You should have been here earlier today.
Yeah, that's interesting. How do we do this? One at a time?
Yes, sir, one at a time. And are the mics sound like they're on? I don't know if Carla can see the light. Very good. And we find out that about 6 inches away is sort of ideal.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
All right, my name is Bob Bergen. I am a 30-year general contractor in Oregon, mostly in Northeast Portland. I'm presently a volunteer for Habitat International. I'm a post-disaster construction superintendent. And I'm also the liaison between the state VOAD and the State Services Office of Habitat. I have a piece of property that I've been wanting to build to 600, 800 square foot permanent homes on, which technically, in my opinion, that ADU doesn't cover that, but that's what you're calling it. And I'd be glad to do it. I've taken plans into the city twice and been told that the one on the right, there would be no development fees, and one on the right, on the left, would cost me $30,000 to do. And I said, I'm not going to do that. That's ridiculous. So pursuant to that, I think that development services should have a whole new office, to a new name, to figure out how we're going to do all of these without development fees. And to answer Commissioner Fritz's question, you know, you're spending a ton of money moving people around. that are camping and cleaning up, and they're out there. Every ADU you put in or somebody puts in is going to get one of those people off the streets. You're going to save the money. You can put that into development. I call this do-it-yourself habitat. I'm sure there's a lot of people like myself who, you know, you can't take it with you. I'm not rich, but I would be more than happy to build those units, 400, 600 square foot, make them absolutely off-grid. It can be done if you want to. There's no reason to do it, but we can make them that well, okay? Landscaping so that no one ever has to touch it, right? And rent them, and I would be more than happy to charge a rent commensurate with what it costs me to do it to where I will end up making no money on it. Now, if you started that office in development services and developed a program like this and got the word out and did a little PR, I'm sure that you'd have people come into that office saying, show me how to do it, okay? Just because it's the right thing to do. That's the way people are in Portland, okay? And it'd be a great thing. It'd be a very humanitarian action to do. Let's see. Am I done?
No, okay.
The other thing I think you should do, one last thing, and I know this is way over the top. You need to get together with the Attorney General of Oregon and Washington and sue Airbnb. It's a violation of people's property rights. It changes my neighborhood into a commercial piece of property, and I don't think anyone's really looked into this. You know, it's a property rights have been the basis of a legal society since the signing of the Magna Carta. Okay, it's a big deal.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. It's good testimony. Thank you.
Okay, hi, I'm Joe Robertson. I'm a owner of Shelter Solutions. I'm a residential builder. Been building. This is the fourth time in the last 9 years that I've testified to this commission concerning this issue of SDCs. And during that time, or during the last 20 years in Portland, I've built over 100 ADUs. So I have a pretty big group of case studies of how they've been used over the years and so forth. I appreciate the commissioners and their support of ADUs in the past, and as Eli said, making Portland really the leader in the nation in building ADUs. I've been amazed over the years of the uses of ADUs and how they can transition from one use to another throughout the life of them and provide all kinds of uses for the homeowners. I do support this resolution and look at it as a reasonable compromise. However, I think there may be some negative unintended consequences. I don't know how it will be addressed as far as providing housing for relatives or friends on a short-term basis, and I hope that it will not do something to prevent that. I have a customer right now, for example. First of all, let me just say I'm not a big fan of Airbnb or short-term rental. A lot of my customers have done it, but not as many as you would think. Most of them are many more uses, like aging in place, like exactly this case study that you said. I've done four or five of those like that, and a lot of good uses. So it's a small percentage that's been Airbnb or that are Airbnb now. I have one, however, right now I'm going to be completed with in about 30 days, and she is building it primarily for her and her husband's parents to live in part-time. For her to be able to do that and provide that for them part-time, she has to rent it out as an Airbnb part-time to cover her costs. That's one example, and she told me today when I told her I was coming here, I would not be doing this if I couldn't supplement my income and cover my costs with a short-term rental. Another one that was just featured in the Oregonian about a month ago in North Portland, they use it as a community meetings, neighborhood meetings, community, and let other neighbors use it for their guests. They have to rent it out two weeks out of the year 2 weeks per month to cover their costs. So neither one of those would have built that ADU if they would have been prevented from doing that. So I think it's something that should be thought about. All in all, though, I support the resolution, and I thank you for your support.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Mayor Wheeler, commissioners, thank you so much for the chance to talk with you today. My name is Tim Miller, and I run an organization called Inhabit. You heard it mentioned earlier this afternoon. We're a nonprofit organization, and our mission is to create social impact through better living spaces. And we started just across the hall here back in 2009, 2010. You may know us for doing thousands of energy efficiency projects. We've helped about 5,000 families improve their homes. You may know that we've done seismic work to upgrade and improve the resilience of homes. Recently, we've worked in the floodplain to help reduce folks' insurance costs and help stabilize those families. And we're also the organization working with the county and with the Joint Office of Homeless Services to build the four pilot ADUs to help create housing for some homeless families. We all know that we are in a housing crisis, and ADUs are not the solution to the problem. We need multifamily buildings. We have shelters. We have dozens of nonprofits working on this. We're helping people stay in homes by improving those homes, a range of efforts, but ADUs can be a huge part of that range of solutions, as you all know. We see ADUs addressing homelessness, like in the units that we're building now, with programs wrapped around those construction projects. ADUs address low-income housing. ADUs can help folks stay in their homes, as we discussed earlier. ADUs can be a solution for aging in place and can be built ADA compliant. ADUs can give folks access to neighborhoods they would not otherwise be able to access, opportunity neighborhoods, as we've talked about before. And they're a path to gentle density, is how our colleagues in Hood River are thinking about ADUs for them. We're working with dozens of partners on this effort. Mr. Liberty from the Institute for Sustainable Solutions and Eli are a couple of our friends and colleagues working on this effort. Dozens of other groups. There's a whole team of nonprofits and other organizations working on a build small approach. How do we do all this work? We're aiming to, at Inhabit, we're aiming to get units down to $100,000 to $125,000 to build them. But when you think about that math, then, you see that $15,000 to $20,000 of SDCs is 15, 20% of the cost, which is a really big swing. So we also see an importance of having a system that was mentioned in some of the comments to help gather the right contractors, ideally minority and women-owned contractors, to the extent that we can do that. Designs, loans, we're working with Craft 3 and others to build and create access to those loan products, as Inhabit has always done, and create the help and process to help folks do this. So that hopefully we can go from 500 ADUs a year to 1,500 ADUs a year and really drive this. Without an SDC waiver, I think that 500 would go down to 100 or 150, back where it was before we had the SDC waiver. So we're really looking very closely at this, and waivers are a fundamental platform on which we can build all these other programs to get at the issues that you all mentioned about who benefits and who doesn't.
Thank you.
Platform.
Thank you. Thanks, all three of you.
The next three are Shuler Silva, Willie Dean, and Ben Jacklett.
Good afternoon. Would you like to start, sir?
Sure.
Thank you.
Commissioners and Mayor, thanks for having us today. My name is Skylar Silva. I'm the co-owner and founder of Squarefoot Studios, a design-build firm specializing in accessory dwelling units and home studios here in Portland. We're also working with Inhabit on the A Place for You project, providing ADUs for homeless. I've come here today to give testimony on the resolution to extend the waiver of the service development charges on ADUs on behalf of our past, current, and future clients, as well as their communities, not on behalf of my company. The resolution, should it pass, would be of great benefit to our company, that is no doubt, but as a design-build firm, we value our clients' needs first. A majority of our ADU clients approach us wanting to leverage their asset of property to create housing, adding a revenue stream for the homeowner.